Have you ever just felt that pull, that desire to sort of connect with something deeper, maybe some ancient wisdom?
Absolutely. Like finding guidance from people who really dedicated their whole lives to spiritual things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what draws me to the Desert Fathers and Mothers, these figures from early Christianity.
Right, the ones who chose solitude, asceticism out in the deserts, mostly Egypt.
They were pursuing this intense spiritual connection. It wasn't just about getting away from it all, was it?
No, not at all. It was a really rigorous internal journey, a kind of battle with the self to reach this profound level of devotion.
And those journeys, those stories, are captured in this fascinating book we're diving into today. It's called 80 Days Journey with the Desert Fathers.
Ah, Palladius's work, Bishop of Hellenopolis.
That's the one. Now, Palladius himself, he wasn't one of the original desert dwellers, but he lived in the 4th century.
Right, and crucially, he traveled through the Egyptian desert.
Yeah. He collected these stories, sometimes firsthand accounts, about these remarkable men and women. You could almost call him an early spiritual biographer.
That's a great way to put it. And what makes the book so valuable, I think, is that it gives you these really intimate glimpses. It's through the eyes of someone who was, actually there on the ground. It's not just abstract theory.
No, it's very human, very grounded in experience. And the format of the book really helps with that too, doesn't it?
It does. It's broken down into these shorter stories, anecdotes, really.
Which makes it super accessible, right? You can just pick it up, read a story or two, and really chew on it.
Let it sink in. Yeah.
And the promise, right from the start, is that through these stories, we can get a deeper understanding of virtues. Things like humility, perseverance.
Key themes, definitely.
So our mission today for this deep dive is to explore what Palladius was really aiming for with this collection. We'll look at his introduction, see what he says himself, and then we'll dig into a few representative stories just to give you a real taste of what the book is like.
Sounds good. Understanding his purpose and then seeing how that plays out in the actual accounts he chose to include.
Exactly. Okay, so let's start with that introduction. What does Palladius actually say he's doing?
Well, he's pretty direct. He says his goal is to record the excellent deeds and the marvelous lives of these desert fathers and mothers.
Marvelous lives. I like that.
Yeah. He paints them as people who consciously withdrew from the everyday world to chase what he calls a heavenly life.
Striving for the kingdom of heaven, as he puts it.
Right. But it's not just about recording history for him.
No.
He explicitly says he wants readers to emulate their example.
Okay. So it's instructional too. These are models to follow.
Precisely. They're not just figures from the past. They're meant to inspire spiritual aspiration now for the reader.
And something I really appreciated was his specific mention of marvelous women.
Yes, that's so important.
It really pushes back against the idea that this was just a male thing, doesn't it? He highlights these women and their own intense spiritual journeys.
It's a crucial corrective. Because often, yeah, the historical narratives can overlook or downplay the role of women in these movements. Palladius puts them right there alongside the men.
And he emphasizes his sources. He says he saw some of these people himself.
Firsthand accounts.
And others he learned about directly from their disciples. It gives the whole thing a real sense of immediacy, authenticity.
It really does. It underlines his commitment. He wasn't just collecting gossip or rumors. He was seeking out these living examples or their direct students.
You feel that commitment when he describes his travels, right?
Yeah.
Through very many cities, villages, caves, and holes in the earth.
Driven by, what was it, the labor of the fear of God?
Wow, that's some serious dedication, serious travel, fueled by deep conviction.
It really tells you how much value he placed on these lives, on their teachings. He saw them as crucial lessons, worth all that effort.
The whole book is addressed to someone named Lausus.
Right, his friend.
And he speaks about Lausus in such glowing terms, triumphant, God-fearing, a true friend and servant of God.
It gets the personal feel, doesn't it? Like he's sharing these incredible discoveries with a respected friend.
Yeah, it does. Like we're listening in on this important conversation.
Suggests a shared world, a shared value placed on these spiritual matters.
And one last thing from the intro. He makes a point of saying these pure lives weren't only found in the desert.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he includes stories of people in cities, villages, communities, basically saying you can pursue this kind of spiritual integrity anywhere.
So it's not just about geography, it's about the internal state.
Exactly. Okay, so that sets the stage, Palladius' mission. Now let's get into some of the people he writes about. Abba Isidore's story really stood out to me.
Isidore of Alexandria, yes. He was a priest, and he was actually the overseer of the hospital there.
So active in the city, but he had desert roots.
He did. Spent time in the desert as a younger man, so he had that monastic grounding even while serving in a more urban context during the time of Emperor Theodosius the Great.
And the descriptions of his practices, they're intense.
Very ascetic, I think.
Things like never wearing linen, apparently never washing, not eating meat, not even sitting down properly for a meal.
Just kind of eating on the go almost.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Palladius says his body shone.
That's the paradox, isn't it? This extreme self-denial, but it leads to this radiant appearance.
What do you make of that? Is it literal, do you think, or more metaphorical?
It's hard to say for sure. Maybe it wasn't a literal glow, but more like an inner peace, a spiritual vitality that just radiated from him. It definitely challenges our usual ideas about health and well-being.
It does, and it confused people at the time, too.
Right, because he looked healthy. People who didn't know his lifestyle just assumed he was living it up.
Assumed he was indulging in luxury. It just shows how misleading appearances can be.
And how much of that deep spiritual work is hidden? You know, what you see on the surface, it rarely tells the whole story.
Beyond the asceticism, though, he was known for being incredibly merciful, peaceful.
Yes, Palladius emphasizes that. Says even non-believers, his enemies, were kind of shamed by his goodness.
That's powerful, that his character had an impact beyond just the Christian community.
It shows that the asceticism wasn't just for personal gain, was it? It was meant to cultivate virtues that changed how you interacted with everyone. His inner work led to outward kindness.
Then there's that sort of mystical side, being carried away by contemplation during meals.
Yeah, and not being able to describe the food of glory he experienced.
Suggests these moments of real connection beyond the material.
Like glimpses of the divine, maybe.
Yeah.
Thinning the veil, getting a taste of that spiritual nourishment they longed for.
And his reaction to earthly food, feeling ashamed.
Ashamed is a rational being eating, quote, irrational creature food, longing for the imperishable food of paradise.
It's such a stark expression of that detachment from the material, that focus on the eternal.
It really reveals how deeply ingrained that perspective was. It wasn't just following rules. It was this whole theological worldview about, you know, our place in things.
And yet, despite being so detached himself, he wasn't stingy. He'd traveled, met bishops, and was known for generosity to the poor.
Another one of those fascinating contradictions.
Right. It shows the detachment wasn't about being cold or indifferent. Maybe it freed him up to be generous.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Freedom from the grip of possessions lets you be a better channel for helping others.
And his death. Wow. Just remarkable.
No will. Right, left nothing to anyone.
Not even his 70 sisters, who were virgins dedicated to God, just complete trust that God would provide.
That level of faith,
Yeah.
it's almost hard to wrap your head around today. Total surrender.
It really is. He lived by that trust and he died by it. And the story ends with Palladius wanting to learn from him, but Isidore sends him off to someone else
The
first.
Dorotheos, for the really tough foundational training.
Suggests a kind of structured path, doesn't it? Okay, so let's talk about Dorotheos of Thebes.
Okay. If Isidore was intense, Dorotheos is, well, another level entirely.
60 years in a cave.
60 years.
Yeah.
And this is who Isidore sends Palladius to for 3 years.
3 years living like Dorotheos. I can't even imagine. Palladius describes him living on dry bread.
And working constantly, collecting stones in the desert heat.
To build cells for other monks, finishing maybe one cell a year, the physical toll must have been immense.
Just staggering. It speaks to this incredible discipline, this belief that hard physical labor was part of the spiritual path
A way to subdue the body.
and serve the community. Yeah. The hardship was a tool, focusing the mind.
In his famous line when people worried about him, I kill it lest it should kill me.
Stark, isn't it? Really captures that idea of the constant battle against the body's
A
desires.
very direct view that physical urges are an obstacle to spiritual life.
Uncompromising.
His eating habits, minimal sleep, never lying down, falling asleep while working.
It's just pushing human limits constantly for decades.
It paints a picture of extreme vigilance, extreme self-denial.
A radical commitment that's honestly hard for us to fully grasp.
And that story with the viper in the well, it's so vivid.
It really is. Palladius goes for water, sees the snake, totally freaks out, presumably.
Right, but Dorotheos is just calm, makes the sign of the cross.
Drinks the water and tells Palladius basically, Don't worry, evil has no power here.
Such a demonstration of faith overcoming fear, just absolute trust.
It's not just being brave. It's this deep conviction in the power of his faith over any physical threat.
And I love the connection Palladius says Isidore told him that story.
Having heard it from Anthony the Great himself.
Exactly. It creates this chain, this lineage of wisdom being passed down, these stories reinforcing their beliefs.
Mm. Shared experience is building the tradition.
Okay, so for our last example, let's shift focus a bit. The story of the Virgin Potamiana.
Ah, yes. This takes us away from the desert ascetic and into the world of persecution and martyrdom.
Still in Alexandria, though?
Right. Potamiana was a young Christian woman, apparently very beautiful, and she was a handmaiden.
To a master who wasn't a good guy.
No. He was apparently pleasure-seeking, tried to seduce her. She refused.
And his reaction was rage, betrayal. Yeah.
He falsely accuses her to the prefect, Basilides, says she's a Christian who reviles the government.
Just using her faith as a weapon against her, it highlights the real danger Christians face.
Absolutely. Just believing could get you arrested, tortured, killed. It was the reality for many in that period.
And the prefect's actions. Just brutal torture.
Mm-hmm. And then this horrific plan with the boiling pitch.
Threatening to throw her in unless she gave in to her master. It's chilling.
The cruelty is hard to comprehend, but it underscores the violence they faced for their faith.
The Potamiana's response. Incredible defiance.
Declares herself the handmaiden of Christ. Refuses to yield.
And her final request. It's just breathtaking.
Asking to be lowered in gradually, right? Without being stripped.
Yeah. So her endurance could be a testament, a witness to Christ's strength in her. What does that tell you?
It shows this profound dignity, this unwavering commitment right to the end. Her focus wasn't just avoiding pain. It was maintaining her integrity, witnessing through her suffering.
Amazing courage.
Truly.
And the description of her death, peaceful, as the pitch reached her neck. And the pitch miraculously cooling.
It's a powerful image. Suggests divine presence, her ultimate victory, even in martyrdom.
Like a sign of divine favor for her faithfulness.
Exactly. A symbol of triumph over suffering.
Palladius calls it a good martyrdom and mentions others were killed in Alexandria then too.
Including her mother, Marcella.
Right. He places it during the reign of Septimius Severus, so it grounds it historically in a time of known persecution.
It really contextualizes her sacrifice, reminds us the church's foundations were often built on the courage and suffering of individuals like her.
So when we look back at these stories, Isidore, Dorotheos, Potamiana, and think about Palladius's introduction, what are the big takeaways?
Well, you definitely see that intense devotion, that unwavering commitment to God.
Yeah, absolutely. And the self-denial, right? As a path to spiritual growth.
Mm-hmm. That comes through strongly. Mm-hmm. Also, just unshakable faith, even facing extreme hardship or, you know, death.
And the idea that this pursuit of spiritual purity, it happened in different ways, different places, not just the desert.
That's right. Palladius's collection really does give you this remarkable window into these lives, their dedication to something beyond the material world.
Their stories are ancient, but they still resonate, don't they? They offer these insights into faith, into what humans are capable of spiritually.
They really do. They continue to challenge and inspire.
Definitely. So if you're looking for that kind of inspiration or just want to understand this foundational period of Christian monasticism better.
This book, 80 Days Journey with the Desert Fathers, is a fantastic place to start.
We've only scratched the surface today, obviously. There are many more stories in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's by Palladius, Bishop of Hellenopolis, and it's published by St. Shenouda Press.
You can find it on the publisher's website, St. Shenouda Press.
Or on Amazon as well. It's readily available.
Definitely worth checking out.
Absolutely. And, you know, reading these stories, it really makes you pause and think, doesn't it? What does it truly mean for us today to live a life that's deeply dedicated to our core beliefs? How do these ancient examples maybe challenge or inspire us now?
That's a great question to reflect on. What does that kind of commitment look like in our modern world?